people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars, coming to you from Strongbox West in the beautiful city of Atlanta. We are sitting around the table with some good friends, and they are...
Ben.
Becca.
Jennifer.
And we just take care of some quick business before we jump into our very short agenda for this episode. Thank you for leaving ratings on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Those search engines apparently need those ratings to make us more visible to more people. So if you would kindly rate us, we would greatly appreciate it. And if you have criticisms of the show or have some suggested improvements for us, find us via our website, thethingaboutcars.com/contacts, or just click on the contacts link there on the front page. We love hearing from you guys, whether it's a compliment or a concern or a correction even. We need your input. So thank you for being in touch with us about that. Today's agenda is really short, but I'm going to start with a moment of Grand Trivia Auto, and then we're going to do a listener question. How about that?
All right.
All right. So the moment of Grand Trivia Auto. In business from 1901 to 1938, which company provided the first official car used by the White House? Was it Hadley Knight? Was it Pierce Arrow? Was it Graham Page? Or was it Morris London? Think about that.
All right.
We'll come back to that at the end of the episode. So in business from 1901 to 1938, which company provided the first official car used by the White House? Our user question for the day, our user question, that I can't call it user question. Josh is not a user.
I feel so used.
So the listener question for today is he says, I have a power steering leak somewhere, which I think is kind of funny. I have a power steering leak somewhere. I just put in some power steering fluid I got from O'Reilly's. It smells horrible when leaking and burning. Will the fumes kill me? Question mark. So my answer was, well, I'll tell you what my answer was in a second, but what do you guys think?
Well, it just depends on how much of me breathes.
Right. I mean, it's not something you should breathe all the time. It's something you need to fix it. And pretty much everything that you pour into a car anyways has a carcinogenic warning on it. And I would say it's probably not all that healthy for you.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said you probably need to get it fixed in a matter of days and not weeks.
Right. Yeah, well, one big thing to point out here is the fact that if smoke is happening, that means the fluid is being burned.
Yes.
And I did a quick and dirty little search on power steering fluid and looked at some safety data sheets online. Most of them are petroleum-based, which means there is a fire danger. If there's enough to make smoke, then a little more might make fire. Plus, anytime you burn petroleum products, especially those that have all kinds of funky chemical additives in them, that's probably not very healthy stuff to breathe.
Right. Right. So there's your answer. If burning power steering fluid does smell terrible and given enough time, it might actually kill you. But
if you have to put up with it, open the windows.
Right. Really. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's power steering pump, right? It's not something that you want to mess around with. Because if it goes, your job gets a whole lot harder.
Yeah.
And the car is at that point a lot less safe to drive.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, on a similar topic, I think it was the last episode we'd mentioned about reading the owner's manual and opening the windows as far as odors. I don't know if this still pertains anymore. It used to be the original new car smell was actually composed of things that had tanned the leather and glues and adhesives.
Yep.
And your manual would actually tell you that it was bad for you to breathe in the new car smell and that you should roll the windows down while driving until it goes away. Yeah. So I think a lot of that is fake now that people actually, or manufacturers actually put in the new car smell
right,
now.
You can actually buy a bottle of new car smell.
You can buy, instead of the pine trees that are hanging down, you can buy something that hangs down with new car smell. They used to tell you that it was actually hazardous for you to breathe in the new car smell.
People are crazy.
Well, nowadays it's mostly compounds that are off-gassing from all the plastics
exactly.
Been used.
And that's the other thing. Here we are in a societal rant again. Why does anything need to smell like anything? I don't need air fresheners in my house. As long as the air is clean, I don't need to smell like spring breeze or whatever, you know.
It's better than it smelling terrible.
I mean, if you live next to a tannery or something, sure.
Well, I'm just saying in general smells, because the olfactory smell is pretty strong for people. So we want to smell pleasant things. And if we can't get rid of the bad smell, we'll just make it all flowery and we can't smell it anymore.
I don't know. First world problems, right? It's like if your greatest concern is what the air in your house smells like, I kind of want your life.
Well, and there was that one French king, I forget who it was, who believed that water was dangerous. And so instead of bathing, he would douse himself with perfumes.
Right.
Which is where the whole modern personal fragrance industry comes from. Of course, yeah. To tie it back, what kind of car would he drive if he were alive today?
That is a good question.
Although, I mean, dihydrogen monoxide is 100% of people that consume it do die.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What's on our agenda?
Let's visit your auto advocate.
Good morning, Mickey. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, you know, I couldn't be better, truly.
That's fantastic. This week, I think I'd like to talk about a part of the car buying process. If I'm a new car buyer and I walk into a showroom floor, what should I have with me?
Well, if you want to be taken seriously, and from all my experience, salespeople want serious customers. Mm-hmm. The first thing I would do when I walk into a dealership is explain to the salesperson who greets you what it is that you hope to accomplish that day. If you're just there to get information, tell them up front, you're just there to get information. I'm not looking for a price on the car. I just want to get information. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to buy a car, the things that you need to bring with you, for instance, if you have a trade-in, and most people do, bring the title to the trade. Bring the current registration to the trade. Make sure the title and the registration are in your name. You cannot trade a car, and believe me, I've seen people try. You cannot trade a car that's not yours. It's got to be in your name, both the registration and the title. If you financed the car and you have paid it off, bring the lien release from the bank showing that they no longer have an interest in that vehicle.
Right.
Bring your insurance card. Please make sure it's current. The one that expired 6 months ago doesn't help you or us or the bank for your new loan. It's got to be a current insurance card. Bring your driver's license. Now, I will tell you, one of the things that people don't think about when they're buying a car is how they're going to handle their down payment. So if you're planning on putting money down, bring the cash. Nobody does that. Bring your checkbook if you're planning on writing a check for your down payment. If you're planning on using your credit card, check with the dealership prior to getting there, because most dealerships have a maximum amount they'll allow you to put on the credit card.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. I've worked for dealerships where that maximum amount has been as low as $1,000. Or as high as $5,000. And the reason for that is they have to pay a processing fee, and well, that eats into the little bit of profit that they do make.
Right.
And the last thing, if you're going to put the down payment on your debit card, check with your bank as to what your daily limit is. And most banks, believe it or not, it's about $500. So if you don't make arrangements prior to getting to the dealership and you were planning on putting $3,000 on your debit card, you better call the bank and say, I'd like to be able to have my daily limit raised to $3,000 just right. for today so I can put a down payment on the car that I want to get.
Right.
Those are the things you should bring. And the most important thing a customer can bring to the dealership when they want to be taken seriously, bring a good attitude. And I know that sounds odd. And I know that most people believe that buying a car is an adversarial relationship. It is not. It goes much better when it's a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. But the truth be told, the salesperson has the same goal as the customer. The customer wants to buy a car. The salesperson wants to sell a car. And if by working together and making it a pleasant experience, it'll go much easier than, well, fighting.
Right.
I hated fighting with customers. It's just so much simpler not to.
You know, for years I watched my father do the talking whenever he tried to buy a car, and it was hard to get out of there with everybody in a good mood. and I don't know if it was just because his steadfastness to what he wanted to pay as a bottom line price, or if the dealer was actually making things difficult for him. I could, as a child, I could never tell which what was happening.
The truth be told, it was both. Mm-hmm. You know, dealers and dealership personnel get stubborn. Customers get stubborn. Knowledge is king, and the customers don't necessarily have as much knowledge as we would like them to have in the car business.
Right.
So it makes it more difficult. It shouldn't be a battle. It's the second most expensive purchase most people are going to make in their lives.
Right.
Buying their house. And I don't know when people, I know when Zach bought his house a couple of years ago, he was excited. He had a huge smile on his face after he completed all the paperwork. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people walk out of a dealership miserable because it took 6, 8, 10 hours. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to take that amount of time. It shouldn't. And I hated when we would find ourselves in situations like that because it's not worth it to anybody. Think of it from this perspective. Customers would tell me, God, I hate having to do this. And I would look at them and go, you only have to do this once every 3 or 4 years. I have to do this 5 or 6 times a day. Think of it from our perspective. We want it to be simple. I'll be as transparent with you as I possibly can. I don't need the aggravation of this dragging on for hours.
Right.
I'd like to get it over with in 10 or 15 minutes. And that's really the way it should be.
Thank you, Ray. Good stuff. And as always, how do folks find you and your blog?
YourAutoAdvocate.com gets you directly to me, and I'll be there to help you. I look forward to helping some of these folks out.
Awesome. Thank you, Ray. We'll see you again for another Your Auto Advocate segment in about a week.
Terrific. Thank you, Mickey. It was a pleasure chatting with you today.
I wrote up on the board, fix a flat, or someone wrote it up there for me. So this person wrote, she says, I was on the highway and caught a flat. I had a can of that fix a flat stuff, and I fired it in there to get to the next gas station to get some air. And when she finally took the tire to the shop, they say they couldn't find the leak. And so the question was, does she just get a new tire or wait for the sealant to give out?
Pretty much once you put Fix-A-Flat in there, you need to replace the tire. Oh, and it eats your wheels too.
That's correct. It can corrode a rim.
So get it off the rim.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or wheel or whatever you want to call it. You need to get it off of there. And yeah, your tire is not ever going to be the same again.
I mean, it's one of those products that I think is good in an absolute emergency, but if you can avoid using it at all, just don't use it.
Because it'll affect the balance of the wheel too.
Right. It affects the balance of the wheel. It could potentially corrode the wheel, the metal on the wheel. I've heard it really wrecks havoc with TPS systems.
I was about to mention those.
Yes.
You know, I tell people don't let a bottle of Fix-A-Flat, don't let a bottle of that stuff ever be a substitute for actually just a spare.
Or
a properly inflated spare.
Right. Yeah. Or I always have tire inflators in my car. Unless you have a blowout or a major tear in your tire, an inflator is going to get you a lot further down the road in case of an emergency as well.
Right.
Because I don't know how many people actually check their spares and know that they have to be replaced, that they can be dry rotted or something in there or not inflated and you need an inflator again.
Right. It's one of those inventions that I'm like, I wish people wouldn't think that they're handy, right? It's just, anyway, I understand it's cheap to administer and easy to do, but it's just bad news. And nothing ever good happens from a Fix-A-Flat other than you getting home. And if that's your priority, then use that.
Well, and there are some situations where that is an absolute priority, in which case it's do whatever you got
to
do.
To get home, exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean.
It's understand there are consequences later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like buy a whole new wheel and tire.
And TPS sensor or.
And this even gets into my whole situation with the car I bought this past year. The means for reinflating a tire. I don't have a spare tire. I've got one of those.
You've got like my Pontiac has, you have the trunk mounted inflator and it has the more or less fix a flat integrated into the system. Get it out. See,
really? There's a slime pump in that thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so the dealership that I went to doesn't sell Dodges, they sell GMs, but it's used. I'm still dickering with them about getting me an actual spare tire in the back. The way they make the trunk doesn't lend itself. That's a long story too.
There's room, but you have to buy the molding piece that holds down the tire. Yeah. I ran into the same thing.
But they're giving me runaround though about being able to do it, and they promised it to me to sell me the car.
The entry level V6.
8 months later.
Just to clarify, the entry level V6 model has a spare tire with a jack and appropriate tools. Once you get above that, though, they delete that to put things like a stereo subwoofer or whatever down in that compartment, and they substitute with the slime pump. So when we bought the car, we said, well, we don't have the subwoofer, obviously, so we don't have any issue with using that space. So can you guys get the tie down, the jack, the tire, the lug nut tool, and put those in there? And they said yes, and it's been 7 months now, and they haven't done it, and we keep bugging them.
Did you get it in writing?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But I've been really patient. I didn't want to go be just super. I could have. I just haven't.
I would park in the middle of their service bay until they addressed the problem.
Well, we did go up there in person one time, and then we did have like a higher level manager working with us. But now he's kind of blowing me off. So
keep climbing the chain.
I'm going to bug him some more, and I'm going to. It's high priority, yes, but it not so much that I'm going to be a stalker.
I just had sort of a dark moment. Do we name these people on the podcast, or do we cast some shade their direction, or?
Like I said, I've been very patient because I could have already blasted Google and things.
I will say it is one of the large auto dealer groups in the Atlanta area.
Which you'd think they'd have the wherewithal just to fix a problem and get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean they do even have Dodge and Chrysler showrooms in their family of businesses. So it's not like it's that difficult to.
Well, talking about fix-a-flat reminds me of something that my brother-in-law once told me, and I'm kind of shocked at what he told me. Considering that he's a fan of fine cars, like he actually has an older Acura NSX, which I've strangely never actually seen. Right? Huh. I think I may have seen it from a distance, but I've never been invited to go actually take a look at it and check it out. I bought my sister's Honda from her, and I came back and I later asked my sister, I'm like, did you notice anything about an oil leak in that car? Cause I thought it was losing some oil, and I thought I'd seen some strange things under the hood. Like I couldn't tell if there was an oil leak on the block or not, coming off the valve covers. And she's like, no, I never noticed anything. There was never any oil hitting the ground or anything. I was like, oh, okay. I just wanted to get some data from her. I was trying to figure out if she knew what was going on and could that point the direction of what I needed to fix. To which her husband said, oh, just pour a bottle of Stop Leak in it. And I'm like, my jaw hit the ground, and it was all I could do to just not have this knee-jerk reaction in front of him that said, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Don't do it with the AC system either. These people love to put the Stop Leak in the AC. Don't do it.
Stop Leak is almost universally just a bad idea.
Yes.
Nothing ever good ever comes from using a bottle of Stop Leak.
The intention is to gum things up. Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah. It's a good way
to replace parts.
It's a good way to get yourself to require a new engine because it fouls everything up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know, Ben, what do you think about the whole Stop Leak thing?
No, don't use it.
Yeah. I was just kind of floored. I'm like, this guy presumably is into cars. He actually owns an NSX. Would he pour Stop Leak in that? Because I certainly hope not.
No.
I've heard of weirder.
Because unless your oil is like really pouring out right in front of your eyes, it's not a catastrophic situation. A very annoying situation, yes, but you're going to get home with the average oil leak.
Well, if you know how to add Stop Leak, you know how to add oil. You're not going to be in a catastrophic situation unless you drop your oil pan.
There's time to deal with it.
Right. And not only that, for older engines, if it's an older engine and you can just increase the weight of the oil, sometimes that's enough to slow the leak.
Yeah. That's like I've talked about with my Mustang, and it's not really there's a specific leak. It's just the age of the engine and the age of the seals.
Exactly.
They like to call it consumption by the time you get to a certain age on the car. And I just stick with the original 10W30. Everybody says, oh, you can get away with this. No, the thicker the 10W30 I use just helps keep things from slipping between the old seals.
Right. just, I was floored at the notion that, that he would have suggested that kind of thing. And, you know, but if he's listening, if he's listening, please, please understand that I'm sort of exaggerating here for comedic effect. But please also understand that I was like, wait, what? But, all right.
And if anybody listening who has an NSX was okay with letting us drive it.
The new one. Have you seen the new one?
Yeah. Meh. Yeah.
That's what they said about the original NSX, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved the original one from the get-go. I looked at that and went, whoa.
There were all kinds of criticisms that, you know, the supercar thing still only has a four-cylinder engine in it.
Well, it didn't, though. It had a six.
Did it?
Yeah, it was a V6.
I did not know this. I thought it was an I4.
No, it was a six, and I think a lot of people were a little underwhelmed because Honda made it.
Huh.
You know, but it was really damn good. It was competent. I rode in one once. I've never driven one. Mm-hmm. And it was really quite enjoyable. And the early ones, well, all of them are still, they've retained a lot of value in the market. You know, I think the last time I checked, which was a few years ago, you were looking at somewhere in the 30s for entry-level, high-mileage used NSXs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pay that much for a car without door handles. Okay, technically, yes, I know, but
well, it doesn't still have the funny chrome joke. Kind that stick off.
It doesn't have the stick-off kind, yeah. They're hidden. And there's lots of stories about people trying to find, where's the door handle?
They're not as badly hidden as some of the ones I've seen on some of the really high-end Italian cars, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I've seen one car that didn't have handles at all, period. It had a solenoid that activated whenever you walk near the car. And just popped the door open for you. Anyway, all right. Enough of my little rant there again. Forgive me, my brother-in-law, for using you on the show today. What else is on our agenda?
I think we've
exhausted everything.
I think we've exhausted the list over there.
So we're going to go to Italian Car Day.
Yeah.
I just put it on my calendar. I think I'm clear to go that day, so I'm 90% certain I can be there. We'll try to get there a little bit early to try to set up maybe. And it was just a ton of fun. I mean, we saw a lot of cool cars there last year. There's a lot of Italian driving heritage to be seen. It was a fun day.
It sure was.
Yeah. And the group, it's kind of weird. Those people who drive the Italian cars, I didn't realize that there was an actual active club. Those guys actually did a raffle and a giveaway. And it was pretty clear that some of those people had known each other for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yes, we will be there, and maybe we can do some listener participation, like maybe get guests there at the table if we get to record that day. I'm going to talk to those folks and see if we can arrange something. But keep your ears peeled. And otherwise, if you see us at Italian Car Day, please do come by and say hi.
Oh, and there was a lady there last year, too, that was exciting to me because she was selling this homemade hot sauce that I picked up a couple bottles of. And it was so delicious.
Yes,
I hope she's there again.
You need some more hot sauce?
It was good stuff.
That's too funny.
Since we're kind of winging it here, yeah. I'm going to go back to something that I touched on a little bit before. I went back and I'm reading about the Bronco again. Mm-hmm. So not only is the top, as they put it, removable this time, the doors will be removable this time as well, competing with Jeep more. Wow. I'm excited.
That's a smart idea, actually.
I know I never buy new cars.
What's the starting sticker on that supposed to be?
It's showing starting at 30,000 estimated. This could be available in 2 doors and 4 doors.
Which means 40 to 50 off the floor.
At least, yeah. I guess depending on what all. But I'm excited. I really am. I'd like to go sit in one. I don't think I'm going to be able to afford one for like 20 years.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, I'm going to have to look into that if I ever actually make any money again.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to answer our trivia question. Grand Trivia Auto.
Ah, yes, yes.
Grand Trivia Auto. The question was, in business from 1901 to 1938, which company provided the first official car used by the White House? Was it Pierce Arrow? Was it Morris London, Graham Page, or Hadley Knight?
I'm going with Pierce Arrow.
Why are you going with Pierce Arrow?
It's ringing some bell with me, mm-hmm. and the only thing sticking in my head that I can visualize is a hood ornament. I know that sounds bizarre, but it for some reason. So I'm going with Pierce Arrow.
Jen, what do you think?
Was it Hadley?
Hadley Knight, Pierce Arrow, Graham Knight, Morris London.
I'm going to go with Morris London. The two in the middle just seem too obscure.
Okay.
They both have
it's a total guess. Total guess.
Total guess. Ben, what do you think?
Well, my gut says Pierce Arrow, but the Hadley Knight rings a little bit of a bell, too, for some weird reason. But I think I'll stick with Pierce Arrow.
Why does your gut say Pierce Arrow?
He seems to be asking that a lot with Pierce Arrow.
No, I was going
to
ask the same thing if he'd said Hadley Knight. I want to know why Hadley Knight rings the bell.
Well, I'm aware of the Knight line of cars. They merged with Willys at one point. They were
the Knight Industries 3000. Sorry. Yeah.
No, the pre-war Knights were a little bit on the luxurious side. Of course, Pierce Arrow was too.
Yeah.
I'm not certain about Pierce Arrow's actual date of demise, but they were pretty well known and pretty well respected.
That answers both my questions. I mean, I was wondering why Hadley Knight also stuck in your mind, and
but I don't know if it's the same Knight.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because Remy Hadley was one of the doctors on House. I'm just saying.
All right, here's the answer. The Pierce Arrow Motor Car Company produced automobiles from 1901 to 1938.
Cha-ching.
Their car that was produced for the luxury market, the Great Arrow, won the Glidden Trophy in 1905 after winning an 1,100-mile endurance race. President Taft ordered two Pierce Arrows in 1909. They were the White House Model M Tourers models, which were to be used for state occasions. So Pierce Arrow is correct. Well done, you guys.
Yay.
Pierce Arrow through my heart.
And weren't they consumed by another car company, or did they demise?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened to Pierce Arrow. I wonder what happened to those specific cars. They're like if they're in a museum somewhere or something.
Well, Detroit has its museum. It might be in there. There's a lot of famous cars,
might
Kennedys.
Be there. It could be the Smithsonian or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I do know that there's a nice little group of presidential cars on display at the Henry Ford.
Ah.
I was there several months ago.
Is that what Becca's talking about?
Yes.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah. They've got. And they're all from like the 1950s and 60s. Well, there's one from the 70s. It's a 70-some Lincoln that was used by everybody from, I want to say, Nixon through, I think it actually was used on up into the Clinton administration. Not much. I think it was a backup car by
then. And
then
nobody wanted to use it after Clinton had it. I'm just saying.
They also had the actual car that Kennedy was shot in.
Yeah,
which had been extensively modified. A roof was put on it, and Johnson kept on using it.
Mm-hmm. Man, that was a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Understatement.
Yeah. All right. So thank you, as always, to our listener for joining us. Our listener, one.
Yeah.
Our one listener.
Our one listener. And thank you also to that one listener for giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify, because when the one listener does that, it helps us reach another listener. So that maybe when we next broadcast another podcast, we'll have two listeners. This is a terrible ending, isn't it? I can't dismount.
So we need to end it on something else. I was sitting over here admiring your shirt, by the way, because I just realized that Godzilla is on it.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
I love it. I was thinking this whole time that I needed to wear my yummy sushi pajamas to match your shirt, and I just realized Godzilla's on it. I've been trying to get my kids into Godzilla. I had them watching Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, at least, and they were getting into it. But
we should do a pajama party.
That would be awesome.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
We don't even have to record it. Let's just do a pajama party.
Okay.
All right. On that much more pleasant note, thank you, as always, for joining us. We love it when you subscribe and tell your friends about us. Thank you also for leaving your feedback for us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That helps us reach more people. And if you really like what we do, please support us via Patreon, patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. It helps us do more things, bigger, better, stronger, faster than before. Thank you, as always. Be safe out there. We'll see you again in about a week.
Bye.
There we go.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.